Welcome to the National Bicycle Greenway's Mountain Mover podcast series. Here you will get up close and personal with people who are taking giant steps for the betterment of cyclists and for the planet itself. I'd like to introduce my listeners to the woman who I know is going to help me make the National Bicycle Greenway real. Far more than young and beautiful, she is a most very determined powerhouse who really knows no limits. A native of Ireland, I'd like to introduce you to my wife, Virginia Krieg. Hello, Virginia.
Hi, Martin.
Okay, let's get right into it. You and I were 8 time zones apart, a 10-hour plane flight away. Why don't you begin by telling everyone here how we met?
Yes, sure, Martin. We met, as you know, online through relations of mine who were living close to you, and we continued to email each other, and the emails progressed into Skype phone calls, and we really got to know each other pretty well, and then we both felt a strong connection and we wanted to meet each other. So you thankfully came over. You took the initial step and came over to see me in Ireland and spent a month here. And I then went over to America with you. And here we are now today.
Very early in life, you had a head injury of your own. Almost like somewhat of a near-death experience. Can you explain what happened? It was something to do with a stick in your throat that nearly severed the base of your brain or something like that?
Yes, sure, Martin. I guess you could say, I don't know about it being a near death experience. It was pretty serious at the time. I was quite young when it happened, but old enough to remember it. Basically, we were just playing around as kids, and as you do, and I just so happened to have a stick in my mouth, which was forced back up to the roof of my mouth, and it nearly did some serious damage, and I spent many weeks in hospital, and I was in intensive care, and I was under a lot of supervision with doctors and that, and basically was told I was lucky to be alive and lucky to actually be alive and not be a vegetable. It happened, as I said, many, many years ago, but I remember it very, very vividly.
Okay, it caused you to see some things differently. I think it was at that point that you began to know that you were different. Is that, I know there was some kind of undertone, undercurrent that you had that explanation for me one time. That's how I even knew that was a part of your life. Can you go into a little bit of detail about that?
Yeah, sure. I guess it probably changed me, that whole experience. It certainly it made me see things differently to a lot of people that were around me, and I appreciated life and valued life, and I saw things that people would see to be very important. I didn't see them as you know, of much importance, as in I always believed in seeing things from the heart, and you know, I wasn't a very world person, if you like. I liked simple, and I just kind of stayed on a path that was slightly different to my friends and my siblings and that. I don't know, did it make me more mature or had me ahead of my years or what you'd say. But certainly it did change me, and it changed my outlook on a lot of things.
I'm often humored by what you call traffic. It's Just for my listeners, all the roads here are two lanes, one going one way, one going the other way. There are really no two-lane roads. And yes, certainly there is traffic, but it's just because there's not much road capacity, if you will. I said I was going to skip a few years with your life, Virginia. You were a chef here in Ireland, and that was your first career. How rigorous was it to be certified as a chef here in Ireland? Was that pretty tough stuff?
Yes, it was. I started training at quite a young age, 16 or 17, if I remember correctly. It was pretty tough and strict, but I got through it, and then I went out and did lots of work experience, and I learned a lot of my cooking skills, if you like, out in the industry, in kitchens and that. And I did that for just over 10 years, and worked long hours, unsociable hours doing that.
But you said it was like the army. It was like boot camp, something about if you didn't do something right, you got hit over the back of your chef's hat by one of the lead chefs that would... You were always kind of in fear, or something about time. It was like you had to race around. You're always on the clock, always on your feet. Talk to me about that a little bit.
Yeah, the training was pretty severe, pretty harsh. Time was a big thing. Everything was a big thing. You had to have everything very precise and very right. The chefs that were teaching us were very, very old time chefs, and they were very old school, if you like. And if you peeled a carrot wrong or a potato wrong, or you know, you did something they didn't like, you'd certainly get a push, or you know, you would be in fear of any mistakes that you may make along the way. So yeah, it was pretty tough, and especially the fact that, you know, when you're doing that at a young age, you're not probably as able to deal with it. You know, you'd be that bit more sensitive. You'd be that bit more soft-skinned, you know, to that sort of a thing. But it was good experience to help me to go on to the next level when I did go into real kitchens and real situations. It helped a lot.
Okay, were you not one of the youngest cooks here in Ireland?
No, not at all. I'm sure there was many others my age doing that. There was a lot older as well. There was just many mixed stages doing it.
Well, I know that you tend to be largely very modest where things like that are concerned. When you say there were probably many, I'd say maybe in the whole country here there might have been, I'd say, a dozen, if that many, female chefs, and you were one of them. You told me also that one tourist hotel/restaurant that you worked in, that during the off season you ran the entire operation. Can you go into a little bit of detail about that?
Yeah, sure, Martin. I worked in a few restaurants over the years, and I was in charge of some of them, the running of the kitchen, and just involved, you know, everything basically from ordering to preparing to cooking, and it was I guess a pretty tough job, you know, to undertake. There was a lot at stake, and everything had to be done right, and it was a good experience for me.
But again, your modesty prevails once again. It seems to me here in Ireland that you ran a very popular restaurant, one that had queues lining up out the door for your food, and that you created the menu, you ordered the food, you were the kind of food people were coming to eat were all the choices you'd made. So you had a big hand in making for that being a popular restaurant. Speak to that a little bit for us.
Yeah, Martin, without being too modest, as you say. I did make up a lot of menus in restaurants and left a lot of restaurants with my menus. And I guess you could say I was, you know, a big part of all of that when I was in that industry.
And when you were in that industry and then in that modality, times were good. You were running some pretty high numbers. You were making good money. You were buying new clothes. You had a home. You had a nice car. Then you hit a wall. All of a sudden it became apparent to you that there was more. You wanted to learn a little bit more about what life was about. I think it seemed, if I remember you telling me correctly, something about you wanted to learn about yourself. Talk about that just a little bit.
Yeah, I had worked in the catering industry for over 10 years. And as you know, it's long hours, very unsociable hours. And there was many occasions where I wouldn't get any breaks or lunches. You're on your feet the whole time. And I don't have a problem with that. It's hard work and I love hard work and I love a challenge. However, I had my daughter to raise and I'd bought a home. I had a lot of other things besides to be thinking of and to put first. And I kind of thought there has to be more to life than this, which was working nonstop and sometimes not eating because, you know, you wouldn't have time to eat and come home physically and mentally exhausted. And I felt this is not the way I want to live my life and it's not the way life should be. So I decided to quit my job and move forward.
Okay, and it was also, I guess, during this time, you reinvented yourself. You got into success books. You became kind of a gym rat. You learned about food. You learned about spirit. You learned a lot of things that people take for granted. You stopped partying, kind of a hard thing to do here in Ireland. And were those hard times?
Yes, I did go into a journey where I was finding myself, if you like, and spending a lot more time with my daughter, some quality time, and giving her a great start for her education and for her life. I read many, many spiritual books. I read many self-healing books, self-improving books. I joined the gym. I did a lot of challenging things in my life to kind of better myself and put my best foot forward for my daughter. And I had a breakthrough. However, with regards to partying and that, being a mother at a young age, 22 years of age, you don't get to go to parties because you have priorities. And my priority was my daughter. And I gave up the lifestyle that my friends continued to have. I moved on from my friends because I felt I had nothing in common with them anymore. So it was difficult times, it was very lonely times. However, I hungered into my spiritual work and I really kept myself motivated. I did some extra courses and educated myself in other fields and just kept trying to improve myself and my life for myself and my daughter.
Okay, well, you talk about other fields. You became certified as a lifeguard, and then you went beyond that, and you learned how to teach kids how to swim. Well, can you go in a little bit of detail about that?
Yes, I always wanted to be a good swimmer. I always wanted to swim. I guess as a child, I didn't get many swimming lessons, so I thought, this is my chance now. I have a little bit of extra time. So I took up swimming lessons, and I did, as you said there, became a lifeguard and then did the swim teacher's course, and it was great, a great achievement. And after that, then I did some other courses to help better myself for sales and computers. And I then applied for a job, which was something totally different, totally out of my fields, totally not in alignment with what I had been doing over the years. So it was just a total change for me.
Great. Now I'm going to assume when you talk about that new total change for you that it involved a career change, really. It was the switch to optometry, of which now you've got a credential from an esteemed university in England. And I know that you've now been working with this for 6 years. Can you tell us a little bit about that new industry?
Yeah, sure, Martin. I after I did my sales course and that, I applied for a job, and totally not even thinking I would get this job, because at the same time I'd applied for many other jobs, just putting it out there and just seeing what would become of it. But I really didn't think I would get this job, and out of several hundred applicants, I actually got the job. And I got great training and continued to get great training with it. And I'm there 6 years, and I did a course out of it with the university and got my certification for that. And I'm still working with eyes, and I love it. It's something new. It's something different.
Okay, so you've gone from working with a handful of people to now working with the public. Has that given you a different order of reality? Are you comfortable now in that place?
It's a big change, because I had been working in kitchens behind closed doors for many years. So it was a big step to take this job and be then faced with the public. So I guess, yeah, I'm very used to it now, but it took a while to adapt to it, but certainly it's great to meet people and you know, meet all kinds of people, and it's fun, it's good.
And then here's something that I've got to ask you about, and it's almost really should have been at the beginning, but it's more kind of a punchline, if you will. Through all this, you've raised an amazing little girl. She's now 10 years old. She excels in school. She's extremely popular. Her name is Eva. Tell us a little bit about what it was like to get her to that level.
Yeah, absolutely. It was difficult. There's nothing easy about raising children, as every parent knows. It's very demanding and it can be stressful at times, but it's also very, very rewarding. It was hard to juggle work and juggle bills and pay a mortgage and, you know, put my best foot forward for Eva and make sure she had the best of everything, which she did. I'm very proud of her. I'm very proud of myself for the work I've done with her, and I gave my life up for Eva, and you know, as any parent would do for their child, and I'm very proud of who she's become. So, you know, it's all been very worthwhile.
Awesome. You read my book. You said, that's me. It was at that point you decided you wanted to do something for mankind. And you saw me helping to build the National Bicycle Greenway. And you saw that as the answer to what you'd been putting out for, that you wanted to be a part of that. Can you comment on that for me?
Basically, I read your book, and yeah, you were very similar to me in how you got on with your life after your head injury. I guess I felt, you know, I went through a lot of what you went through in a different type of a way. Obviously, there were different scenarios. With regards to wanting to help you, I've always had an interest in volunteer work. I've been doing volunteer work now for a long time, and have great interest in it. And it's also something that I have been looking to, you know, that path I've been looking to bring my life to is helping others. I love helping others, and I love to see people doing work for other people. It's great, and I guess what you were doing, yeah, I thought it was really good. You asked me to be a part of it, and sure, I was happy to be a part of it.
Awesome. I was going through deprivation and humility training. The same type of thing that I talk about in my book, How to Bike America, kind of a necessary, what I feel a necessary skill one must learn in order to really have an efficacious bike ride across America. At least that's how I felt like I had some of the kinds of things I had to do in order to make this highway run that I'm going to be doing from San Francisco, San Jose to Boston, a successful one. And you suffered with me. You coached me through some of the more difficult times, all the way from over here in Ireland, no less. What do you remember about some of those days that you'd like to share?
Yes, I did share all of the deprivation training with you. I may not have been there in body, but I was certainly there very much with you, we spent, as you know, every day communicating. There was not a day we did not communicate, and I saw you went through some very difficult times, and I felt it was very difficult for me to see you going through them difficult times, and I guess I was so far away, we were so far apart, you know, it was difficult. But I remember a few names that come to mind that did reach out and helped you a lot, which I thought was great. You know, that they really showed their kindness and really showed that they believed in what you were doing. Johnny, with the bus, which was great. Then you got a generator, which was brilliant, from John O'Leary. And then you had Sean coming over helping you out, and then you had Dawn at the garage. I just thought it was amazing that all these guys were doing all this for you, and you know, they believed in you and saw that you were doing this for the better of the planet.
I was kind of reduced to very low levels of survival in order to kind of keep this juggernaut, if you will, going forward. I was even compromised where power was concerned. I remember it was so embarrassing to not even have enough AC power just to make a phone call. And you remember some of the Skype difficulties we had and some of the email difficulties, and on top of that there was the 8-hour time difference. What do you remember about that?
What do I remember about that? Well, I'm glad that I'm still not in that scenario right now, because it was pretty frustrating. The Skype phone calls sometimes were a little bit of a problem. We may have been in the middle of a conversation and we'd get cut off, or we couldn't hear each other, or it was a bit of a nightmare. But we got through it and continued emailing and Skyping for nearly a year, and we got to know each other very, very well. So I guess your deprivation training, as bad as it was at the time, it was a great thing in the sense that it helped us get together and be strong.
Thank you, Virginia. I feel very blessed for that comment. You celebrate your 33rd birthday next week, I think, what, next Wednesday. What does the future hold in store for you?
You're telling everyone my age now, Martin.
Oops.
What does the future hold in store for me? Well, I try not to look into the future if I at all can, and I certainly try not look at the past unless I can take good from it. But going forward, if I must answer the question, my future, with you and with my faith, I know will be a very bright one, and I'll ensure that it will be a very bright one, and I'll continue with my my strength and my faith, and I'll continue to try and make this a better place for others out there, and put my best foot forward for the MBG, and you know, do anything in my power that I can do to help make the world a better place, I guess.
Pretty awesome. We're just about out of time. Is there anything you'd like to add? Do you want to talk about your big brothers and sisters and big brothers and big sisters' work, or is there anything you'd like to add that we've left out?
No, Martin, that's fine. I know you're running out of time, and we'll leave it at that, because we could talk all day, and I know that you've got work to do and I've got work to do. So, no, it's great, and I guess I'd like to thank everybody who showed their support for us and who have helped us.
Wow, how exciting! I just want to say, awesome, Virginia. Thank you. I feel blessed that you're in my life. I feel blessed that you're a part of what I have going forward, and I'm proud to be able to say that you're part of what I'm all about, and you're my life, you're my energy, you're my oxygen, and I love you, Virginia.
Thank you, Martin, for that, and ditto.
Yahoo. Okay. Good night.
Good night, Martin.
That wraps up another edition of the National Bicycle Greenways Mountain Movers podcast series. We hope you enjoyed it. This has been NBG Director and Awake Again author Martin Krieg. To access this podcast in the future and to hear other shakers and movers that we've interviewed, go to bikeroute.com.